Another rain report's on its way in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. For folks who just happen to be blind or visually impaired, ham radio is one real effective way to reach out to the world without having to walk out your front door. Some refer to amateur radio as a very level playing field for anyone with disabilities, physical or otherwise. Last time we brought you the first of two excerpts of an interview with Dr. Ron Milliman, K8HSY, one such ham who just happens to be blind. Ron is a tenured professor of marketing at Western Kentucky University. He was recently interviewed on the weekly ham radio podcast QSO Today by its founder, Eric Guth, 4U1UG. Here is our second excerpt from that interview.
You mentioned in the pre-show interview that you had a business venture with a couple of buddies in Arizona when you were working on your graduate degree.
Comes back to ham radio. When I was working on my PhD at Arizona State, my very, very good friend through high school and buddy, he moved out to Arizona where I was. And he and I always had a dream of having our own commercial broadcast station. He was a ham as well. K8OEY is his call. And his name happened to be Ron as well. We got to be good friends with a guy that owned a local broadcast station, Command Radio, KMND, Mesa, Arizona. We used to go and hang out there quite a lot. And because I was doing my PhD at Arizona State at the time, which is in Tempe, and Mesa is just about 25 miles down the road from Tempe. Well, the owner, there's more than one owner, decided that they wanted to sell the station. We wanted to buy it, but we didn't have the deep pockets to put the deal together. But we knew another guy that did, who happened to also be a ham operator. We got three of us went in together, and we got the station. The one guy was the finance guy. My buddy Ron, he was the technology guy, and I was the marketing guy. So we got the station, and it had a lot of work that had to be done on it. But with our ham background, our background in electronics, why, it was not that big a deal for us to do the work on the Gates transmitter we had to do and some of the RCA stuff we had in there that we had to work on. And that relates to my interest in background music, because the one thing we had going for us was a FM subcarrier that we could piggyback over our FM signal that we could broadcast into doctor offices and dentist offices and lawyer offices and local retail. Then I wanted to do research and try to get some idea of what kind of music would we broadcast. Interestingly enough, there was nothing done on that, no research. There was Muzak, but frankly, their research was, there was nothing scientific about it at all. It was a joke. But that got me involved in doing some preliminary research on the effects of background music. It's really kind of interesting how that all goes back to ham radio days and interest in electronics and how the three of us hams got together and put that station together. And it's really kind of fascinating.
What impact did ham radio have on your family life?
Quite a bit, actually, because in my first marriage, I married a lady that I had dated through high school. She actually got her ham license, WN8IWM, I believe it was. But she wasn't very active. She got her license really because of me. Later on, I had two boys and a daughter. My one son is not really interested in ham radio. My daughter was never interested in ham radio. But my oldest son got interested, and he's a WB5VQX, and he's had his ham license since he was about 14 or 15. Just this last year, my son helped me get up a full wave loop for 80 meters. Actually, the ham club helped me put it up. I really, really greatly appreciated the ham club helping me get it up. I really sincerely appreciated their help. But when we got it done, nothing worked. So my son came over, and in about 30 minutes, my son and I had it figured out, and we got it working. And over the span of time from about mid-August to the very beginning of December, I worked with my loop and my TS-590. I worked 99 countries, 6 continents, and 42 states. So I'm very happy with that station. It worked quite well.
So you use the 80-meter loop with a wire tuner?
I use a LDG automatic antenna tuner, the LDG Pro 1000 Pro 2. I mean, the loop is actually the best antenna I've ever had that works all bands. I've had probably better antennas for specific bands, but I don't think I've ever had a better antenna that worked all bands with that tuner.
A pretty large property.
I have actually two houses. I have a place here in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and I have another place out in Lake Barkley, Kentucky, because I like to fish. I love to fish. That lot's fairly large, and we've got the loop strung around through the trees around into the backyard. I had just enough room to put it up, and I think probably because of its proximity to the water, to the lake, that might help it a little bit. I don't know, because I'm really amazed at how well it works.
What is Handy Hams, and what role do you play in Handy Hams?
Well, I'm a member of Handy Hams. Handy Hams has been around for many, many, many years. It was formed to help people with disabilities get involved in ham radio, to help them get their licenses and to help them get equipment and that sort of thing. I think the emphasis has been people with sight impairments, blind people. And I've been a member quite some time. It's a fantastic organization. They've helped many, many, many people get into ham radio. They have a ham radio camp for blind people every summer. In fact, you can even get your ham license there, because I think they do testing and they put up antennas and they have some stations going, and it's just a lot of fun. It's like a field day. And I've not attended the camp. I'm familiar with a lot of people that has attended camp. Usually because of my work schedule and so forth, I was never able to.
Well, you contributed an article to the Handy Hams website called Getting Started on 6 Meters. Why 6 Meters?
Because 6 Meters is kind of the mystery band. It's a band that doesn't get a lot of attention, and it's a mystery band because you never know when it's going to pop open with sporadic E or something. And when it pops open, if you're there, but you can work the world, I mean, with practically no power on 6 Meters. But when it's closed, it's good for only short distances, like 2 Meters. It doesn't get a lot of attention. I don't think as many people work 6 Meters as what they used to at one time. There's some questions that came up on one of our blind hams email lists about 6 Meters. And so I just decided to go ahead and write that article. It's a band I'd worked. I don't work it very much now, but I do pay attention to it. And when it's open, it's a lot of fun to work. You can work the world on practically nothing. And so that's why I picked that. Everybody knows about 20 meters and 10 meters and that, but 6 meters is kind of a mystery band. But I also wrote a couple of other articles for them as well on their website. One is on JPO and the other is the Double Bazooka article I wrote. I love to experiment with antennas. That's the one thing that we can do today. You know, it's hard to get parts to be home brewers like what we used to be, but we can still build antennas. So I love to build and experiment with different antennas.
You're in the middle of a conversation that took place this past winter between QSO Today podcast producer Eric Guth, 4U1UG, and Dr. Ron Milliman, K8HSY, a tenured professor of marketing with Western Kentucky University. We'll conclude the second excerpt with this blind entrepreneur in a moment. This is The Rain Report, heard on Twitter at #TheRainReport, and on demand on therainreport.com.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Unfortunately, a lot of the descriptions in the magazines QST and CQ are, again, very visual. They say a picture's worth 1,000 words, and they utilize the pictures quite a bit in terms of depicting how the antenna is to be built and how it's to be fed and so on and so forth. It's hard to visualize those things. And so I happen to be familiar with the Double Bazooka. I built several of them. Also, it's referred to as a coaxial flat top among some circles. And then also the J-Pole, I've built some of those. Some of my blind ham friends couldn't grasp, couldn't visualize, conceptualize how they were built. So I went ahead and wrote a couple of articles to give a fairly vivid description of how to build those antennas.
There's a large number of articles I see now in the magazines that are almost like PowerPoint presentations. So they're assuming that you're looking at the diagrams and they don't have to go into a lot of detail in the text. It's a fine criticism. I think you can do the same thing in a podcast. The more visual or graphic you are in the language, the better it is for everybody to enjoy the article. So anybody listening who writes articles, spend a lot more time on the English and the diagrams are useful. They shouldn't replace the text.
That's a problem we run into every day in even websites. A lot of websites are so graphic, and unless they do the alt tag and so forth and descriptions on websites, it's hard for us to get the full benefit of them. TV broadcasts, try to follow a basketball game from a TV broadcast. It's very, very visual. They expect everybody to be watching the TV as I guess it's reasonable to expect. But that's why when I'm with my friends and we're watching a game, a sports event or something like that, I say, okay, we're going to turn down the volume on the TV. You can watch the TV, but we're going to listen to it on the radio.
What's the greatest challenge that blind hams have with amateur radio?
It's linked to the same thing we're talking about here. On the one hand, while electronics we got available to us today in the digital age has helped us tremendously, on the other hand, it's created some problems. And let me back up just a little bit and kind of back into this question. It's better if I give a little more of a historical perspective to it. Back when I got into ham radio in 1957, the early days, there was absolutely nothing accessible. Accessibility was not even an issue. We had to be very creative in how we learned how to tune our transmitters. I remember turning on an AM radio and finding the heterodyne from my transmitter and tuning the transmitter up with the varying pitch and the tone of that heterodyne. I had a friend of mine that tuned up his rig by putting his hand on the power transformer, and he could feel the vibrations and actually hear the sound of his power transformer as he dipped and loaded the transmitter. And so back in those days, we had to be very creative with the way that we use our equipment. And even receivers, compared to today, the receivers were not selective at all. Think about it. My SX-71, now that didn't even have a crystal calibrator. They had two big dials on it. One was a band spread dial. The other was a main tuning dial. You had to get almost dead accurate with your main tuning dial for your band spread being close to being accurate. And if you got within five, we called it kilocycles back in those days, but within 5 kilohertz, you were lucky to get within 5 kilohertz of where you wanted to go. And for that matter, even if you were sighted, that was somewhat of a challenge. But if you're blind, it was an extreme challenge. And of course, I drooled over that Collins receiver because they bragged about you could get within 1 kilocycle with that early Collins receiver. Back in those days, I couldn't begin to afford Collins. I say that to give people kind of a perspective of where I'm coming from. Now, we jump ahead today. Today, with the Kenwood, and I'm going to have to give credit to Kenwood. I want to recognize Kenwood because Kenwood is the only company, really, that has extremely accessible equipment. The TS-590 is very accessible. It speaks every button, every function. If I want to get within a fraction of a kilohertz, I can punch it up on that 590, and there I am. I mean, within a fraction of a kilohertz. That's a dream come true. And I have a TM-V71A for 2 meters and 440. And it talks as well, as does the 990, but that's built right into the 990. The other rigs, you have to buy a speech board, a module, a plug-in module to get that feature. But it's well worth it. It's only $65, $70, so it's well worth it. Today, with that kind of equipment, it solves tremendous problems for us. But on the other hand, in the march of progress, we have SDRs that is almost totally inaccessible. You see a visual waterfall on your computer screen, and of course, that's not accessible to us at all. Most of the new digital stuff that's out, D-Star, some of that stuff, very, very, very visual. It's a tremendous challenge for us to be able to use it. We need to try to come up with a solution to that. I don't think it's difficult. It's just instead of being able to see it, we need to be able to hear it. Some kind of speech output voice, which would be especially ideal, or some way of hearing it. There's one more thing I think it's interesting to point out about ham radio. I've had the experience of moving. I've moved from Michigan to Arizona to Texas to Louisiana to Kentucky. And the one thing about ham radio is you can move to a new location. You don't know anybody, but you get on 2 meters or 440. Before you know it, you've got some friends. They're inviting you to the ham club. You go to the ham club, and my goodness, within a matter of days or maybe a couple of weeks, you've got a cadre of friends. And it's just amazing what ham radio affords you in that sort of way in terms of relationships and relationships that you build in. And you keep over years. I've got relationships I've had going back into my high school days. I still communicate with those kids I knew back then. So it's really, really, really neat in that way.
Well, you know, you and I were talking before we started the podcast that we even have mutual friends that have intersected through ham radio. And that's certainly true. I am still friends with and still keep in touch with many of the people who were hams when I was a kid. And that was a long time ago, 40 plus years ago. Yeah, no, it's an amazing thing. And you're right. It's a fraternity that is international. I live in Israel, and it didn't take me long to find the hams here. As a result of that, I've got a built-in group of people that I share a common interest
with. Absolutely. When I moved to New Orleans, I met a lady on 2 meters. She helped us get acclimated to the New Orleans area. She introduced me to other hams, and I wasn't there a week, and I had at least a dozen people that I knew, I considered friends. It was just amazing.
That's fine advice. It's one I also always give, and that is join the local ham club, because there's nothing like a bunch of people that can support you in your endeavor.
And that concludes our two excerpts from a conversation that took place earlier this year between Eric Guth, 4U1UG, and Dr. Ron Milliman, K8HSY, a Western Kentucky University tenured professor of marketing that happens to be blind. The original hour-long conversation between Eric and Ron can be heard on the QSO Today website, www.qsotoday.com. While you're there, check out Eric's conversation with RAIN's founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, from earlier this year. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2015 RAIN. All rights reserved. Audio this week courtesy of QSO Today. Now, for everyone connected with these RAIN reports, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 until we see you at the Dayton Hamvention, coming up May 15 through the 17 in suburban Dayton, Ohio.